Rat Pack, where you at?
That dance is so hot right now.
Hey, what's going on? It's Wednesday, August 14th. I'm Jeff. This is The Rant. We got some breaking news we're going to talk about on the podcast today. We'll talk about J.J. McCarthy. We will talk about the latest on Brandon Ayuk. And I want to get into the idea of handcuffing and where a lot of people go wrong with handcuffing, how we can use it effectively this year, or we don't necessarily have to use it at all. I'll get into all those details for you here. In the meantime, though, just real quick, FTNFantasy.com, we have a promo code that goes away tomorrow, 15% off, FTN15. If you have drafts this weekend, next weekend, Labor Day weekend, I got you. I mean, you just got to sign up. I have the cheat sheets all updated now, fully updated. I'm going to do it again on Saturday morning, obviously. I updated them, and then the J.J. McCarthy news happened. I did already update rankings, though, and everything will be set up for you guys for this weekend if you're already a subscriber. But if you want to get in, do it now because the promo code goes away tomorrow. You still get 10% off with Rat Pack, but hey, man, I like 15 is better than 10. 15% off is better, so go check that out over there. All right, so let's get into J.J. McCarthy. Unfortunately, the injury actually was a serious injury. It did not seem like anything was that significant during the course of the preseason game. It didn't sound significant on Monday when it was just described as knee soreness, but he had to have a scope to determine the severity of the injury. And, well, it ended up being a full meniscus tear, which required a full meniscus repair. He's out for the entire year. That sucks. It really sucks because he looked good in the preseason game. Now, granted, it was the first week of the preseason, but it looked like there was going to be something there, and that was going to help Justin Jefferson out. It was going to help the team as a whole out. That's not going to be the case now. So the immediate impact here is that Sam Darnold, he's now officially a starting quarterback with a very long leash. Now, the good news is we've seen this before with Sam Darnold. We saw him as a starter with the Jets, briefly as a starter with Carolina, and we know there's going to be times where he can flash. Like, he's not a bad running quarterback, so he gives a little bit of juice there. Like, he scored some touchdowns as a runner. Obviously, he did that briefly there in that time, that stint with the Panthers. But we also know what's inevitably going to happen. Poor play out of Sam Darnold. He's a backup quarterback. He's not meant to be a full-time starter. Unfortunately for Minnesota, this is kind of what they're left with. You know, it's just really unfortunate. I mean, looking through the depth chart after Darnold at this point now, you have Nick Mullins and Jaren Hall. So very similar to what we had here last year. And that didn't work out well after Kirk Cousins went down with an injury, with the season-ending Achilles injury. So what am I doing with Darnold? I mean, he's obviously now, he has to be a top 32 quarterback. I moved him to 30 right now. That was just a quick reaction. I didn't run projections. I'm going to do that it'll probably be tomorrow. It won't be late today. And then we'll see what happens from there. But I don't anticipate him moving up that much more. He'll probably stay right in that range. Really volatile. I know the next question is, what is the impact here on Justin Jefferson? I really don't think much. I mean, we were already anticipating some Darnold and then a rookie quarterback. And it's not as if, you know, I thought J.J. McCarthy was going to completely move the needle. So I'm not moving Jefferson. He can still be productive with a bad quarterback. Let's not forget that, like, last year, for example, Devontae Adams had over 100 catches with poor quarterback play. So no major concerns there. Hey, if you don't like Justin Jefferson, if you don't like the situation, then just move Justin Jefferson down your board to a point where you're not even going to have to make the decision. You know, let somebody else take him. And that's something I've discussed before on the podcast and then obviously on the radio show. Like, is your board ultimately, and if there's a player you don't like, there's a situation you don't like, you're allowed to move that player. You are totally allowed to do that. You don't have to just sit here if you're using my cheat sheets and just go by the book with my rankings. You don't have to use Mike Clay's rankings if you look him up over at ESPN or Fantasy Pros or whatever, by the book. If you don't agree, move players. The only thing I ever ask of anybody is, know why you don't agree. Don't just disagree for the sake of disagreeing because you think, feel, or believe something. Like, actually have a reason. In this case, the reason might be you're just overly concerned about the quarterback situation. Fine, move him down. I'm not, but if you are, you know, ultimately it's your draft. You're the one in the driver's seat here. You're the one who makes the decisions. So a little bit of a word to the wise there. We're still awaiting anything on Jordan Addison, and this won't actually come until October, but anything on a potential suspension this season for his DUI. I don't think it happens this season. I mean, likely next year, just because of the legal process, and they are going to wait until the legal process is over before issuing any suspension, and it'll likely be 3 games. That is what everybody has suggested, but we may not have to deal with that until next year. Addison still has touchdown upside, but he's going to be a really volatile, like roller coaster type ride of a fantasy option. So I wouldn't go too overboard here. I'm not getting cute with TJ Hockenson at this point. It's just, you're going to have to sit with him. I know he's cheap, he's dirt cheap, but you're going to just sit with him either on your injured reserve or on your bench for who knows. It could be upwards of 2 months. So I wouldn't get cute here. As far as the backfield is concerned, like Aaron Jones, I don't think he's going to fall out of the dead zone. If he does, I have no issue taking him. Aaron Jones still got some skill to him, no doubt about it. But where he's currently going, he's going in that running back dead zone range, just really isn't a part of my board in that range. He just goes too early for my liking. So there's the news on that front. The other piece of news here is a very misleading piece of news, and the situation has continuously been misleading. And of course, I'm talking about Mr. Brandon Ayuk. So news came out yesterday in the afternoon from Ian Rappaport, and the tweet that Rappaport put out was here. I'll just read it verbatim. Update on Brandon Ayuk. The Steelers and 49ers have a deal on a potential trade, and Pittsburgh is in a good place on an Ayuk contract, sources say. If San Francisco gives the final sign-off, it's done. San Francisco has an offer out to Ayuk on a long-term deal for him to stay, but he has not accepted. So here's the key word in this entire tweet, and this cannot be understated. Potential. They have a deal on a potential trade. Now, I looked to my former employer over at RotoWorld, and the headline of the blurb said, the 49ers are nearing a trade with the Steelers. Not too bad, right? Pretty straightforward. I have not seen that headline elsewhere, so kudos to whoever wrote that at RotoWorld. Like, that's not bad. I've seen some people say they have a deal in place. That's not really true. It's a potential deal, sure, but it's not really true. So what gives here? I still think this is all part of the negotiation process. I think, you know, you're looking at a Steelers team that really has nothing at wide receiver beyond George Pickens. And I'm serious, like nothing. It's bad for them besides George Pickens. So they need desperate help. But the problem here is, you know, whatever the asking price is, and I've heard it's a couple seconds potentially here for Brandon Ayuk, I'm sure that the overall value would get you up into like a back end first round pick, maybe even closer to a mid range first round pick, but we'd actually have to see the picks to get those numbers. Either way, they may be meeting that, but the problem is the 49ers still ultimately have to say yes. Like, there's three different pieces here. You have to have the 49ers say yes, you have to have Ayuk say yes, and that is two yeses. So here's the three pieces. Ayuk say yes to a contract, Ayuk say yes to the destination. I find it a little hard to believe that he would want to go to Pittsburgh, not to knock the Steelers, but I don't think they're necessarily clearly in a Super Bowl window, and I don't think that's a stretch. You don't have to get angry at me, Steelers fans. I don't think that's a stretch at all. The 49ers are in a Super Bowl window. They make deep runs in the playoffs every single year. Last year, they got to the dance, couldn't get over the hump. They're there, and I don't know how much longer they will stay there. You know, obviously you have a couple key players who are getting older. Trent Williams is getting older. He's still holding out, by the way. Christian McCaffrey is up there in age. Some key pieces here for sure. So they're in a window. Why would you give up Brandon Ayuk? So I'm still not convinced. This is a weird situation. And I know that Ayuk is a little perturbed because this report from Rappaport, that's not coming from Brandon Ayuk's agent. It's not coming from Brandon Ayuk. That's almost certainly coming from somebody in the 49ers organization who leaks it to Rappaport. Again, part of the negotiation process. So I think something ultimately does get done here for Brandon Ayuk, but you know, your guess is as good as mine as to when that actually comes. I'm still treating him as like a front end wide receiver too. And no, I'm not willing to rank him in Pittsburgh right now. I will tell you this, if he goes to Pittsburgh, I would much rather have Russell Wilson as the quarterback than Justin Fields. I think that would be pretty detrimental, but we shall see. All right, still to come on the podcast, we're going to get into this handcuffing discussion real quick. Then I'll get into some emails, and I know I have at least one voicemail to get to. So like I said, we will dive into handcuffing in, well, just a minute after this. All right, so let's talk some handcuffing here. The strategy is an age-old strategy in fantasy football, and you know what it is. I'm almost certain of it, unless you're brand new to fantasy football, but you're essentially drafting the backup of a running back. I don't want to handcuff elsewhere. Handcuffing a tight end, for example, like some people are trying to handcuff Mark Andrews, I really think you're just wasting a bench spot. Carrying two tight ends is not optimal unless you have really deep benches, and even then I'd be hesitant. But regardless, this is another discussion for another day. We're talking running backs now. So the idea is if you roster the backup of a starting running back, if that starting running back gets hurt, then boom, you don't even have to go to waivers. In theory, you don't skip a beat. Now, it's not going to be a perfect one for one. Not everything can be Priest Holmes to Larry Johnson. But if you get 85, 90% of the production out of the backup, then you're in a good spot, right? And then you don't obviously have to worry about waivers and what do you do from there. But not every situation is handcuff worthy. I actually just released an article over at FTNFantasy.com on Monday regarding handcuff strategy and players who were going to, you know, target as handcuffs and all of that. But let me get into this first and foremost. Not every player is handcuffable. So for example, earlier in the podcast, I mentioned Aaron Jones. I would not draft Aaron Jones where he's going in like the fifth round, but let's say you did, fifth or sixth round. Aaron Jones is not a running back who I would be handcuffing. Even though he has a clear backup in Ty Chandler, I would not be using a bench spot on his backup because he wasn't a premium pick. I'm really viewing my premium picks as the first three rounds. So if I invest one of those picks, which they are extremely valuable picks, if I invest one of those in a running back, I need to protect that investment. It's just like insurance. That's all really a handcuff is. You're protecting the investment. I'm not as into or interested in protecting a fifth rounder, or better yet, somebody I draft in like the eighth round. Like there's no reason there to do so. It's really only the anchor running backs. And for me, that's my top 12 running backs. I want to protect that investment. I don't want to protect any other investment. Now, there are some situations, though, where there isn't a clear handcuff. Philadelphia is one of them. Baltimore is another. So Saquon Barkley, no clear handcuff. Yes, Kenny Gainwell is technically second on the depth chart. And then you have Will Shipley, but I'm not convinced either of those guys would just step into Saquon's role. I think then you're looking at a full-blown committee, likely a three-man backfield. So there's no fantasy value to be had there. Likewise, Baltimore, nobody's stepping into Derrick Henry's role in that backfield. It's not as if Justice Hill is going to just be Derrick Henry. So there's really no handcuff there. Jahmyr Gibbs, I wouldn't call David Montgomery a handcuff. David Montgomery's going in like round six. Like, that's not a handcuff. That's actually just that's like a full-blown timeshare, which is fine, but you're not handcuffing Jahmyr Gibbs. You know, so there's some of these situations that just aren't clear, and they don't have to necessarily be clear. You don't have to have a handcuff in every single spot. Those are the three big ones as far as I'm concerned here. Now, as far as the guys who have really clear handcuffs, I would say definitely McCaffrey. It's Elijah Mitchell. And no, it's not Jordan Mason. The depth chart still says Elijah Mitchell. So that's who we're going with. Bijan Robinson, Tyler Allgeier, Breece Hall, Braylon Allen, Jonathan Taylor, Trey Sermon, and then Kyren Williams is Blake Corum. I would say the remaining anchors, so Etienne, White, Pacheco, and Jacobs. Here's where we're leaning, but this is subject to change. Tank Bigsby for ETN. Last year, we saw him lose that job to D'Ernest Johnson, so that could still happen. Rashad White, I'm giving the edge to Bucky Irving. There is a world, though, where Chase Edmonds is ahead of Bucky Irving, so be aware of that. Isaiah Pacheco, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, but Denarik Prince is breathing down Clyde Edwards-Helaire's neck. And then finally, Josh Jacobs. Right now, it's A.J. Dillon. It would not surprise me, though, if it's Marshawn Lynch. And by the way, Marshawn Lynch is good to go with that injury. So if I get one of those guys, let's say that I draft Kyren Williams. I'm going to go to my draft board. I'm going to find Blake Corum. I'm going to move him up two rounds. I'm not moving Braylon Allen up, not moving Tyler Allgeier up, not moving Elijah Mitchell up, none of those guys, because they don't have any more value to me than they had previous to that pick. But after I pick Kyren Williams, Blake Corum's value changes, and it changes fairly significantly. So we have to move him up on my draft board to make sure that I get him before somebody else does. That's why you miss out on your handcuffs. I'll tell you flat out, you did not adjust your board during the course of the draft. If you're just using rankings, then fine. Move him up about 25 spots or so in your rankings, and then you'll make sure that you get him. If I am in a situation where it's Saquon Barkley, all right, I'm not worried about the handcuff. I'm gonna draft running backs as I normally would. Now, when I draft a handcuff, that handcuff is now on my roster for as long as the starter is on my roster. I will tell you, I see this every single year. People will come in, they'll draft a handcuff on draft day, they'll be so happy about it, so proud of themselves, and then by week three, they need to make a waiver move. You know who they want to cut? The freaking handcuff. Not somebody else. They want to cut the handcuff. It's not a strategy through like week three or four. It's a strategy for as long as you roster the player. There is only one point, I will tell you, where I will ever consider cutting the handcuff. And that is if I have made the championship game. Let's say it's like Sunday morning. I'm about to lock in week 17 my roster. I could drop him then if I know the starter's playing. Like there's no reason. It's not going to do me any good beyond that point. That's the only time I would ever cut him. Otherwise, the only way he leaves my team is if I trade the starter. Likely, I'll just trade the starter and the handcuff. And I will tell you, that rarely happens. I almost never do that. So this is a commitment thing. Like if you can't keep that guy on your roster, just don't even bother handcuffing. Like I'm not saying don't handcuff. I'm saying if you cannot commit to the handcuff, don't roster the handcuff. But that all comes down to you. Now, I do find that a lot of managers, and this comes with trades, it comes with waivers as well. There's this thought that the more active you are, the better player you are. And I don't think that's really true. You can be very active and be a bad player. So just keep that in mind. Like you don't have to make a gazillion waiver moves each season to be the top team in your league. And also keep in mind, if you're drafting a handcuff, you got to hold the handcuff. That's the whole point of the handcuff. There's no other, like you basically just pretend like that player doesn't even exist. They have become one with the starter. And then there are players that just aren't worth handcuffing. You know, clear situations, but not worth handcuffing for me. Joe Mixon, Kenneth Walker, James Cook, Aaron Jones, Alvin Kamara, Ramondre, DeAndre, James Conner, Zamir White, Devin Singletary. Like none of those situations are cuff-worthy because those guys are not going in a range where I'm spending a premium pick on them. The earliest any of those guys go is like the fourth round. Maybe you see Walker go in the third round, but he's not an anchor for me anyway. So I guess if that's where you're taking him, but I'm not taking him there because I don't want Kenneth Walker. But if you took him there, I guess. But I'm a little shaky on it. Then you have these like committee situations like Achane, his handcuff isn't necessarily Mostert, and we're going to see three backs in that backfield. It's a true timeshare in Pittsburgh. It's a true timeshare in Tennessee. It looks like it's going to be a true timeshare in Cincinnati. You have the potential of four running backs in Denver. You have Brian Robinson and Austin Ekeler in Washington, but if Robinson goes down, it's more likely Rodriguez than it is Ekeler in that role. The Chargers are going to have a whole bunch of, you know, question marks with Edwards, Dobbins, and then maybe even Jarrett Patterson, Kimani Vidal, whoever. Carolina could be a clear like starter and backup situation, but we just don't know when Jonathan Brooks is going to be back. And then ultimately, we really don't even know if he's just going to blow by Chuba Hubbard. Like, I think he will, but I don't make that decision. Dallas is a bit of a mess. You know, Zeke, Dowdle, Royce Freeman. And then Cleveland, like, I don't expect pre-injury Nick Chubb. Like, he would not be an anchor if he was fully healthy. He'd still be, like, on the edge of RB2 territory. But still, without him, if he does miss time in the beginning of the season, you're going to see not just Jerome Ford. Like, be aware of that. You're going to see Deontay Foreman, and he is good after that injury. Like, you're going to see more than just Jerome Ford. And I'm not basing this on nothing. We saw it last year. We saw more than just Jerome Ford. Now, last year it was Kareem Hunt, but be aware of that. So just a couple quick thoughts on handcuffing, because this is the time of year when obviously we're going to be using those ideas. Let me get over to emails here. If you want to email the show, of course, I set up it's just a Gmail address. It is therantpodjr@gmail.com. Daniel is checking in, and he said FF Strategy as the title here. He says he's been a subscriber for 3 years at FTN. That's awesome. Playing fantasy for 6 years. All right. So we've been there for half of your fantasy life. He has become comfortable with punt RB2, which I'm just calling it hero RB now. We can say you punt your second running back, though. That's cool. He said, even giving in to some zero RB, depending on how the draft goes as well. Here's his question on strategy. It's a 14-teamer, one quarterback, no flex. So it's two running back, two wide out, a tight end, and then you get kicker and defense. 8 bench spots. That's good. That's actually a lot for this league. This league should really probably have 6 bench spots, but good. A little bit of depth there. He said the league has been quarterback crazy the last couple of years. 11 quarterbacks taken in the first 3 rounds. Some guys taking their backup in the 6th round. 4-7 is when most of the tight ends go off the board. He said, from my opinion, would this change my strategy and maybe take a quarterback earlier? When should I look for a tight end? No, I mean, if anything, I might take one even later, because when they're doing that, they are leaving those wideouts on the board for you to really load up. For me, the wheelhouse doesn't change here, so I would look at my wheelhouse options in round 5, see who's there. If it's all 5 of them, which I doubt that would be the case, but you know, starting with McBride and then going all the way down to Pitts, if they're all there, then I wait. If there's like 2 of them left, then yeah, I'll take whoever's highest, as long as there's no negative correlation with my lineup. But no, I would, you know, I'd be looking, still looking to go safe and upside. Like, that's great. They're going to take a backup quarterback, you know, cool. They're not using their bench right if they're taking a second quarterback in round 6. I think that's a big time advantage to not do what they're doing. And I think that's such an important thing. Like, I see so many people fall prey to runs and whatever everybody else is doing in their fantasy drafts. Don't worry about that. Like, if they're all doing one thing, if you're not doing that one thing, you now have an advantage. That's game theory. So that would be my general idea here. And he asked about moving things. Like, no, nothing moves in a 14 team. So the dead zone still goes to the 7th round. Like, it does not change things there. Jared checking in. He's asking about a promo code. I have FTN15 until tomorrow. Then after that, it's Rat Pack for 10% off. Harriam checking in. 14 team leak. He says he's been a loyal listener to the SiriusXM show. Yeah, it's just the podcast is definitely different. I know I say it all the time, but it is. I feel different even just doing this podcast than I do doing the radio show. He said he's in an old man league. If you don't know what an old man league is, by the way, it's a league that never changes their rules, and they're like really antiquated scoring settings, things like that, and they refuse to change. He said quarterbacks and tight ends go early and often. His question, if all the wheelhouses are gone by round 5, would I continue to hammer wide receiver? Yes, I would. He's asking about round 6 for running back. I probably still wait till round 7. I mean, I'm okay to be light at running back. I really, really am. I have no issue there. Try and get quarterback in rounds 9 or 10. The first time I'd look is in round 10. And then I would just go, yeah, he's asking about late round tight end. I'd just go late round tight end. But you won't know ultimately until you get into the draft. And I think this is what, you know, people keep maybe missing here. It's not a strategy. It's strategies, plural, and we have to have all of them, you know, kind of up our sleeve, like know how to use each of these, and then we're going to deploy them during the course of the draft. Like, I don't go into a draft in most normal settings, and this is pretty straightforward settings in this league, I wouldn't go into this draft saying I'm going zero RB or I'm going hero RB. I'm going to go into the draft saying, here's my list of players and let's see who I take with my first pick, and totally be okay with the ordering of my list. Be, you know, like I said earlier, if you don't like a player in a certain spot, then move them. But being okay with that, being confident in that, and then letting that pick dictate what I do with the second pick. And then the second pick dictate what I do with the third pick. And by that point, we'll know, did we go hero RB or are we going zero RB? By the third round, you're going to know that third pick. You know, tight end, there's, I don't like to go robust, which is drafting one of the elite guys. This year, there's only two. Usually, there's like a big three at tight end, but this year, it's really only the two guys at the top. But I like to go wheelhouse. It doesn't mean I always go wheelhouse. You know, and if that's the case, then if I don't, then yeah, I'm going late round tight end and I'm drafting one of the guys on my draft sheet, my draft board, who I'm identifying as giving me a good ceiling in that range. You know, those are two strategies. Quarterback, I in this format, the only thing I might consider other than safe and upside would be a value, and that'd still be a 10th round pick. I don't think based on the sound of this league, I don't think Brock Purdy or Jordan Love or somebody like that gets there, but if they do, then I take them and then I call it a day. You know, I don't know what's going to happen, but I do know the strategies and I know when to use them and how to use them to their completion. And if you want the whole breakdown, the article to start the draft guide, this year's game plan draft guide, breaks the entire strategy set of strategies down. And hey, this is how I draft. Like, you may want to go robust running back, like more power to you, or you may want to go robust tight end. Like, you just have to know how to use them and when to use them and how to do things most effectively, right? So that's what it all comes down to. A lot of 14 team leagues out there. Devin checking in with a draft strategy question. He said, FTN member since June of 2020. Wow, how's that even possible? I don't think we launched until July of 2020. So I guess maybe that's what you mean. I'm pretty sure it was like the middle of July when we launched. So you jumped in right away. That's impressive, Devin. He said he's been doing a baseball draft every couple of nights since mid-June. I think he means best ball. So I don't think you're doing it unless you're doing baseball. I don't know. He said they're not tournaments. Yeah, it's got to be best ball. Oh, anyway, he said one thing he's starting to see is tight ends in the wheelhouse dry up. Hey, best ball is not, it's not redraft. So best ball, you can practice making decisions, but it's not going to reflect what you're going to see in your redraft leagues. And I'll tell you flat out, like, I rarely draft wheelhouse tight ends in best ball because I'm not using the same strategies and the drafts are not the same. So I would be really careful here on that one. Like, I do not think that you're going to see those things in your home drafts. He said also noticing Tyreek starting to fall. He's starting to see him at 6 to 8. Have I missed something? No. But best ball, see, the thing about best ball is, you know, every draft's going to be unique because you don't even know the exposures of the guys you're going up against. And they may be using those strategies. They may not be using those strategies. So there's a lot at play there in best ball leagues. Let me do one more here. Jarek saying he's got a question after the draft. He said he drafted the 10th pick. Highest player available was AJ Brown. When it came back to him, the best player available was Kyren Williams. So he's going hero RB. So the one thing he wasn't prepared for was a tight end wheelhouse and upside and safe quarterbacks. He said he knows that I've talked about them both, but wanted to double check when using these methods for a wheelhouse and after round 10 quarterback, yeah, whatever, with safe and upside. He said, are we okay in taking picks at value or should they be downgraded around? He's saying like how I talk about with the elite quarterback. So I need 3 rounds of value. I think that's what he's getting at here. No, there's no changing things like wheelhouse tight ends. I have my round grades for them, but really the place where I start to look is in round 5. And like I just said, if there are 5 of them left, then I'm going to wait until round 6. But if there's 2 of them left, then I'm going to address the position. And I'm not worried about what my draft board grade is for those players. He said he took Dalton Kincaid in round 5. Okay. Not terrible. And let's see, he took Herbert and Kirk. 12 and 13. Those are fine too. I mean, yeah, that's awesome. Kincaid, if Kincaid's on the board, that would tell me three are left, so I don't hate that. But if there were, if you took Kincaid ahead of like McBride, I don't think you did, though. I don't think you did. He said, side note, he did not see a handcuff article. Well, it is out. So just go on over there to ftnfantasy.com. All right. Keep emailing. I have a couple in the hopper here I'll get to on the podcast tomorrow. I'm going to do a podcast on Thursday and Friday to round out the week here. But the rantpodjr at gmail.com. Like I said, though, I do have a couple voicemails, so let's get to them here. Actually, I have two of them, so we'll do both of them. Here is the first.
Hey, Jeff. Derek in St. Petersburg, Florida here. Do you think you could shed some light as to why so many industry experts are so low on Rashad White this year? I kind of agree with you. I think that volume is king here, and Bucky Irving isn't actually that good. But I'm getting scared away here by so many people telling me he's going to regress. Thanks so much.
Well, I can't speak for other people. You're welcome. I can't speak for other people. I don't know. I actually go out of my way to not know. Like, I don't want to, no offense to any, you know, of my industry friends, I'm not going to read their content or listen to their stuff. Unfortunately, I just don't want to inadvertently take something that they said and pass it off as mine. I would never do that on purpose, but you never know. So I don't ever like to run the risk. I can't speak for anybody else here. I don't know. I can tell you that based on his role, based on his opportunity, and based on the team not being that bad either, I see him as a top 12 option. I don't know why they're putting him outside of the top 12. You know, you'll have to ask them. I don't agree on the idea of that Bucky Irving isn't that good. I actually think he is good. I just don't think the testing numbers were good in the pre-draft process, but I liked what I saw out of him at Oregon. I was actually surprised that the testing numbers weren't as good at the combine. But either way, and let's be clear, like regress means move to the average. It doesn't mean get worse. And his numbers were kind of average last year. So I don't know if we're going to see any regression. You know, it's moved towards the mean. I know somebody's going to come in and correct me on that. And they're going to tell me that mean isn't technically average, blah, blah, blah. But just an easy way to think about it. That's all I'm trying to do here. But yeah, I don't think there's going to be any major regression there being where he was last year. All right, let's do the other voicemail.
Hey, Jeff, this is Fantasy Santa in Utah. Longtime lurker. I've sent you some questions in the past, but I recently started really dabbling hardcore into underdog best ball this year and entered into some super flex drafts, things of that nature. I'm curious in regards to your approach to stacking on both of the super flex quarterbacks. Like, you know, if I pull a Higgins and Waddle in my pursuit of wide receivers, and then I can stack them with, say, like a Burrow Tua later in the draft, or, you know, with a super flex drafting. Is there an edge to that? And then second layered question, is there a different positional stack edge, like quarterback, tight end, quarterback, running back, things of that thing, correlations, things of that nature. So appreciate it. Love the show. Looking forward to hearing from you. Thank you.
So I don't think you're going to go and draft Higgins and then draft Burrow. Burrow's going to go before Higgins in a super flex. So I think that's where I'm a little thrown off here. I don't like super flex best ball because of the stacking component. Like, you have to stack, and it's more difficult because the quarterbacks go earlier. So I actually prefer just the one quarterback format, and how I determine my stacks is based on who I'm taking early. It's that simple. Like, I don't go in and I'm like, well, I'm going to stack these guys here because I don't know who I'm going to get. So let's say round one, I get Ja'Marr Chase. Well, I'm going to go to my queue and I'm going to star Joe Burrow. And then every time that I'm up, and I like to do slow drafts, so anytime I'm up, I'm just going to scroll my queue and just make sure, like, if Burrow's close to the top of the available players, then I'm going to take him because I want to get that stack. This is my first round guy. I want to get that stack. Now, I don't always get that stack. Like, if I draft A.J. Brown, it's harder to get A.J. Brown and Jalen Hurts because you have to invest more in Jalen Hurts than you do in Joe Burrow. But yeah, stacking doesn't just mean quarterback and wide receiver. Like, that's more of a pairing. When you're stacking, you're actually stacking up. Like, you don't just stack two blocks, right, and call that a stack. That's a stack of blocks there. No, you got to put several more blocks on it. So yeah, a tight end or double dipping. Like, I have a bunch of build where it's Caleb and two of the Bears receivers. Now, it's not always the same two. That's what ultimately a stack is. And then in best ball, you could even put the running back in there because it's a team stack. So, yeah, a lot easier to do in one quarterback than super flex. I tend to stay away from super flex for best ball purposes, but you should still be doing it to answer the original question because you're maximizing the upside of your roster. And that's what it's all about when you want to win a tournament. All right, at Jeff Ratcliffe on Twitter, at Jeff Ratcliffe on Instagram, FTNFantasy.com, FTN15 for 15% off. That goes away tomorrow, so use it before you lose it. Otherwise, I'm going to be back tomorrow. We'll talk more football. Keep your eyes and ears peeled for it. All right, I'll catch you on the flip side. I am Jeff, and I'm out.